Clubhouse. April is for Apple. Apple TV Plus, that is. Each week in April, our Love It or Leave It episodes will be featuring original movies and TV series streaming on Apple TV Plus right now.
This is Paul.
This is Sheila.
And today we are joined by Scott from the Spyhards podcast.
Hello there. Thank you for having me.
It is our pleasure to have you join us today on our coverage of this Love It or Leave It for Apple TV Plus's Ted Lasso. This is our Apple TV month. That's why we waited. It was totally intentional that we waited until it won all the awards.
And like everyone else on the planet has possibly seen it.
We just had April, to wait Apple. For freaking April. April. Yeah. Nice.
April. Well, I think that's a nice hybrid of Apple and April, so I'm going to go with that for
totally
you.
Totally intentional. And not even the wine on this part over here.
You'll have to guess which one of us has had.
Right.
We'll tell you at the end in the spoiler section. Yeah.
Bonus points.
There you go. We won't spoil it.
Right. So that brings up a good point. So this Love It or Leave It review will be split into two halves. First half will be a general discussion of the show, things like its characters, its general concept, its setting, things like that. Then, since we love these shows, or not necessarily, I'm not trying to persuade anybody's judgment of this show, but often we enjoy talking about these shows so much that we just can't restrict ourselves to non-spoiler related content. So in the last half, we will end up spilling some beans or tea, as it were, about the content. So if you don't want to hear top secret information about the show, then go ahead and shut it off at that point. But we'll let you know when we get there. Let's just reveal how we found Ted Lasso, because Apple TV Plus is not what I would consider to be a dominant streamer yet. So they don't get all up in your face about what they're doing. When they release something, it's kind of on the down low, you know? So how did you find it, Scott?
I think I just sort of heard it through the ether that it was quite good. It had a little buzz around the time. I think around the beginning of lockdown here in the UK, I really caught up with it. I don't know if that's actually when it launched, though. I don't know about its actual release date. But yeah, it was just sort of the internet was buzzing about it. Twitter was buzzing about it. I had just got an Apple TV as well because I got a new iPhone. So I got the free year with it. So I thought, hey, let's check it out.
Much the same as Scott, actually. We've won an iPad for my mom last year for Mother's Day to thank her for all of her lockdown heroes or heroine-isms, helping us out with our 7-year-old and homeschooling. So we got her the iPad, and then she got this year of Apple TV. There was a couple of shows that I was watching. Dickinson was one of them. And like Scott, I was hearing this buzz about Ted Lasso. Yeah, it was just one of these things that I think it was a weekend in January that like we were snowed in, and my husband and I were just like, all right, Leo, let's watch Ted Lasso. I devoured it in that entire weekend. I think I was done in like a night and a morning with all 10 episodes. So. Mm-hmm. But it was just like this amazing like little feel good thing that I just kept hearing about. I was like, yeah, I need a little boost.
I was like a day one adoptee of Apple TV Plus. So I was keeping track of what was coming out because I wanted to see what they were doing. When I saw this, I like Jason Sudeikis, but not like as like a fanatic. You know, I'm not going to follow his work like crazy. I just, you know, I think he's funny. But when I saw the description, which on IMDb reads, follows U.S. American football coach Ted Lasso heading to the U.K. to manage a struggling London football team in the top flight of English football. That did not grab my attention. No offense to English football fans. It just didn't do it for me.
How dare you? How dare you?
I know. But like you guys, the ether very much seeped in and started saying, like you guys were noticing, this is a quality show that, unlike a lot of the shows that I seem to like, leaves you feeling better after you watched it than when you started. So we gave it a chance, and like you guys, it was sort of like a Karate Kid thing. It just like dove through it in as quickly as we could queue up the episodes, pretty much. By Karate Kid thing, I mean Cobra Kai. We did that with Cobra Kai.
I started watching it, it was about halfway through, so I actually had to do the week to week for a little while towards the end, which was quite painful, I have to admit.
Really?
I think I'm used to binging at this point.
Have either of you seen Major League, the old 1980s movie with Tom Berenger?
Absolutely.
I think when I was younger, but I can't really remember it. I know it sort of inspired this, I think.
Oh, did it? Because I was going to say, whenever I describe this to somebody that doesn't have Apple TV Plus, I say, have you seen Major League?
Yes, this is that's exactly what I've said too.
Where Major League wanted to cash in on different kinds of laughs and not develop the lady owner of the team, that wasn't what they wanted to do here. So let's get into the ins and outs of maybe the soccer aspect or the football, as it were. So when they say the top flight of English football, are you any kind of football fan, Scott?
My entire family love football. I was brought up in a household that watched football crazy. Like, every day was football. So, of course, me being the outsider of the group, I was like, oh, football sucks. And, you know, I'm going to listen to heavy metal. Screw you, parents. So, yeah, it's never been my thing. But I can shed some light on the question about the Premier League, at least.
Oh, well, good. Because I understand that there's so much football in Europe and the UK especially, where that, I mean, down to club levels and the passion with which people pursue it, there's not really a corollary here in the United States, where if you're not pro, you're just dicking around, you know, if you're an adult. and we don't really approach any kind of like recreational league stuff the same way that I think you guys might with football.
There's definitely a league structure. There is definitely several tiers of investment, almost. It seems like a money thing, really.
There is a structure in place wherein if your team doesn't perform up to a certain standard, you move leagues. Is that how it works?
That's right. So, I mean, the team that this show is set around, which isn't a spoiler, AFC Richmond, which is a made-up team for the show. So they're in the top Premier League of British football. That's the top flight. That's, I guess, where the American football leagues, they don't have leagues, they just have the top set of teams. Imagine it's the same thing, but we have leagues underneath. If you're in the bottom three of that league at the end of the season, you're relegated down to the league below it.
And are there just the top two, or are there multiple tiers?
There's at least offhand eight.
Shit,
maybe,
man.
Nine.
That's a lot to keep track of. Wow.
I was thinking, like, you know, they get relegated down, like it's like you go down to the minor leagues, you know, if you're going to use like a baseball, you know, sort of analogy. But like to have like eight different tiers, my God.
Mm.
My blood pressure couldn't take that.
Well, people also have, like, you'll find supporters will have their different teams at different levels. So say, like, in reality, the teams like Chelsea or Manchester United, they're in the Premier League. They'll have their fans, but fans will also support something more low level, like Reading FC, which is down like four leagues below, which is a bit more grassroots. And it's like £10 to go to a match, whereas Chelsea is like £200 a match.
And would that be like a more local team? Like, you know, like Manchester United, like that could be like a more of a national sort of supporting team.
Yeah, you're exactly right. So you'd have like a local team that you would support. My one in my family growing up was Brentford, which is in London, but they're in like the third league, I think. I mean, my information is not particularly current, so don't at me. Don't at me, folks. I'm sorry. But then, like, the rest of my family supported Chelsea at the same time, which are in the top league.
That's not permanent. You can go up or down.
You can go up or down. Brentford could get to the Premier League if they had some very good seasons and money.
All right, so that gives us an idea of the stakes involved here. It's not, you know, in the United States, we have, Sheila just mentioned, we have baseball with its minor league structure, but only the players transport up or down. The teams themselves are set in whatever league they're in because they are part of a system that is meant to develop players themselves, you know, so they go up and down. And then American football, there's just the one league, and there are arena leagues and things like that, but they never seem to last very long. So there's only just the one to worry about.
You will find that with players though, in the UK, to be fair. You'll see a lot of players that will start at a very low grassroots level team, and as they get better, they'll be picked up by better teams and they'll be lifted up the ranks. And as they get older, they'll start to go to lower teams because they're not as good again.
Like one character, Jamie Tart. That's sort of what his deal was, right?
Well, Jamie in the show, this is, I think it's in episode one, so it's not a spoiler particularly.
Right.
He is on loan from Manchester City. Manchester City would be one of the tip-top teams that are winning the league every year. He's on loan to AFC Richmond, which of the last season where the episode one starts off, they sort of finished mid-league, so kind of middling team, kind of not great. So he was on loan to try and boost them up.
Okay. So, yeah, there's no corollary to that in American sports. My players are my players, and I don't care how well you do, you know? So, yeah, that part did need more understanding on the part of this viewer to kind of understand mm-hmm. what he was there for.
There's usually money involved as well. Like, they'll pay to borrow them.
Oh,
and there'll
okay.
be all sorts of, and maybe they'll swap sometimes. So they'll have like an up-and-coming player on Richmond that they'll swap for Jamie Tart. So he can play in the bigger team for a little while and get some experience and then swap back around again.
So it's like if maybe you have five, I don't know the numbers, but say you have five forwards that could start anywhere, but you only need the four or the three, I don't know the right numbers, but you want to keep the one guy fresh and not getting rusty. So you loan him out to keep him running and playing and improving.
Precisely.
Okay.
Better put than I could do it. Well done.
Then I think I got it. Because, like, say in baseball in America, you might see a major league player go to a minor league team for a while, but that's because maybe he got hurt and needs to rehab a little while or something like that. But then he's back up. Okay, so that helps with a little grounding of how this sport works. It's a little different than American sports, but. This I watch a certain amount of British TV, so this helps understand some of that stuff that was flying way over my head in other shows. So that's great. The setting of this, it says a London football team. Is that close enough to accurate?
Yeah, right. I mean, I used to work in Richmond myself. It's filmed in Richmond, and Richmond is inside the M25, which is sort of Greater London. So yeah, technically, it is in London.
Now that we've established the setting and kind of the rules of the universe, let's look at some of the main characters. This is a large cast, and if you pay attention to American movies, you'll probably only recognize Jason Sudeikis. Almost no one else really carries over with a lot of, I don't know, exposure in our media, except you might recognize, how would you say Hannah Waddingham's name? Would it be Waddingham? Something like that?
I've never said it out loud, but yeah, I think that was it. Waddingham.
Waddingham.
That sounds right.
TV fans might know her best as the shame, shame, shame woman from Game of Thrones. And she plays the team's owner. Man, what did you guys think about her character?
I was quite interested to see what she was going to do when I met her. I actually didn't make the Game of Thrones connection until I was doing my research for this podcast. I actually didn't know she was the same person because it's a completely different character.
Right.
And fair play to her. She storms on the stage straight away on that first episode, and she's something to be reckoned with.
I like that she comes to this from a position of hurt. You know, she won this in the divorce settlement from her ex-husband, and her desire being to do nothing but to destroy it because her ex-husband loved it so much. So knowing where she's coming from and where she ended up it was a great arc for her in her journey towards healing. So I like that she had this one notion in her head and the ability to go through the season and, you know, to adapt to the conditions and basically, you know, change her mindset a little bit, soften her position a little. I just like that in these short little 30-minute episodes of 10 episodes, we got to see like a good deal of growth from this one character who seemed so steely and so much of somebody we'd seen before, looking at you, Major League, that's what I kind of came into. And I was kind of, you know, a little skeptical. But I liked what they did with her. So, yeah, where her position came from.
You're definitely set up to feel one way about her in episode one.
Mm. Oh, for sure.
But they don't run with it just on that single track. which makes her a more compelling character than just like a mustache twisting villain. Because I mean, she is set up to be the antagonist. It's not that simple, which makes it good.
Agreed.
Yeah, she's set up to be this sort of callous, hurt, you know, post-divorce person. But even by like a few episodes in, you're almost on her side. Even in her goal, which is ultimately quite a bad goal, but you know, you feel for her. And that's quite a lot for a half an hour TV comedy to pull off.
Yeah. I don't know. Have you guys dabbled in any of the other Apple shows?
Yeah, I've watched like Dickinson, For All Mankind. I've seen The Morning Show.
Have you seen Servant?
I have not. Is that the M. Night Shyamalan one?
That one is also in a half an hour format. And it manages to do kind of four... semi-suspense, kind of horror, definitely all creep factor kind of stuff. But it does for that those things what this does for feel-good comedy, but in a half an hour, in that sort of cinematic way that this does, instead of a sitcom format or some other kind of jump scare thing that you might expect from a horror show or something like that. So it's interesting that they're approaching shorter format pieces, but with that cinematic kind of lens. In some cases, other shows, obviously, like For All Mankind, they go full hours or whatever. But I'm curious about why they went in that direction, you know, looking for shorter things. Was it intentional to try to, you know, like how Quibi tried that same thing, but it didn't work, you know?
Is that even still around?
No, they sold everything.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
We're going to loop back to Ted after we cover a couple more of the other stars here. Is there anybody that stood out to you, Sheila, as someone that you've seen a lot of in the TV or movies that you watch other than Juno Temple?
So I was coming into the kind of fresh. I just really knew Jason Sudeikis and Hannah Waddingham. I actually knew her from Krypton, which I covered for Pop Culture Review.
Aha. What about you, Scott? Are these familiar faces for viewers of the BBC or other, you know, UK-based entertainment?
I really wish I could say it was, but most of them were new to me. Obviously, Jason and Hannah we'd mentioned. The only other person I was vaguely familiar with was Brett Goldstein, who plays Roy Kent in the show, one of the football players, because of his podcast.
Yeah, he's a comedian, isn't he? He's actually a funny guy, right?
Yeah. He's a comedy writer mostly, and he does a film podcast, if I'm correct. Yeah, Films to Be Buried With, which my other half is a big, big, big fan of. So when she heard he was on the show, she was super stoked for it.
I have to say that Brett Goldstein was like the star for me, like the standout. Just as Roy Kent, just in his position, where he was at in his career, his take on things, his curmudgeonliness. Is that a word?
Yeah.
It is now.
I really liked him in this role.
You know, he's about our age, which helps. He's probably a little younger because he's a professional athlete and we're a little old for that. but still, that same, like you're saying, the stage in his career and stuff like that, where it makes it relatable, the idea of upstarts doing things better than you or whatever that might just kind of irk you in a way that he expresses physically. So yeah, he was a relatable character, even though I'm not quite as grumpy as he is.
It's quite the feat when you think about he was actually just originally a writer on the show.
Oh really?
Yeah, he was just he was one of the writers in the writing team, and they tried to find tons of actors to fill that role, and I think eventually someone sort of said, "Why don't we just get Brett?" And that's how it happened.
That's fantastic.
That is a great piece of trivia there. I mean, I don't know a lot of British actors, but I don't think I could picture another player in that role.
It's based off of a real life football player, that character, Roy Keane, who's played for a ton of teams, who's now a manager, actually. So he's kind of gone full circle. Yeah, he's sort of famous on the international stage. He sort of was the player's player. You know, he was the manager on the pitch. He was the enforcer. He was out there pushing people around, angry at the ground, as they say in the show.
I like that.
Well, this character that we're talking about, this Roy Kent, if we haven't picked up the idea here, he is the most experienced player on the team. He's been on championship teams before, but he is losing a step, and he is he knows more about football than any other players on the field or pitch, as it were. But like I said, he's starting to slow down, and he can't keep up quite the way he used to. And this is affecting him. And but when it comes to being an asset on the field and to Ted himself, there's no other player that has a bigger impact than Roy does for him. So, and he's just, it, like we said, he's a grumpy guy. He, it's almost like he, it's like a reluctant leader sort of thing. Like he knows he's got to be the leader but he's not exactly happy to do it.
And he also has his heart of gold. Like when it comes to his niece, like she just completely disarms him. And I think that's why I end up liking him so much so early on, mm-hmm. that you just see this other side of him and he's just, you know, he's just down to earth guy, but you know, you take into account all that he's going through and yeah, you can definitely like relate to him.
The only other actor that I really recognized, like I said, it was Juno Temple, but that's only because she's sort of this chameleon actress in that she can do accents like crazy. I don't even know if that's probably her real accent. Maybe it is. Or maybe she cockneyed it up a little bit. I don't know. I've seen her in American movies and she pulls off, say, a Southern U.S. accent or elsewhere. And she does it all just fine. She doesn't ever seem to play, you know, like Nobel engineers or very well-spoken people. They all seem to be a certain type of character, but she does it all very, very well. And this is a character that I didn't like at first, but then she grew on me quite a bit. Did you guys like Keeley?
No, I had the same experience as you, not at first. She was as brash as the person she was dating at the start of the show, which is Jamie Tart, which we mentioned earlier.
Yeah, I didn't like her either. She was a burn for me, a slow burn.
I never did like Jamie, though. Never came back around on Jamie. What about you guys?
I don't want to get into spoilers. I have some thoughts about Jamie I might save till later.
But, all right. Fair enough.
Yeah, same. There's two moments that Jamie had a change of heart for me.
Didn't get there for me. Didn't.
Not a total change of heart. I mean, but he, you know, he didn't quite strike out.
There are some other characters like, say, Coach Beard, who's kind of interesting. There's the lovable equipment manager, Nate.
Nate
the Great.
He's the only one I know a little bit about because he was doing a TV show on Sky with David Schwimmer called Intelligence.
Aha, yes. That's on the Peacock in America.
Ah, right. Okay, yeah. Cool. Nick wrote that. Nick Mohammed wrote that.
When Peacock went live, and I think they wanted to have like this gigantic slate of stuff, but they went live during the pandemic and they didn't have that slate. So I don't know if the plan was always to buy a bunch of BBC shows and present them like new content. But that's what they did. So that's how we wound up with Intelligence on the Peacock. Also, another character that stood out to me who's just more like a guest star because he doesn't appear that often was the reporter, Trent Crim, because he just had this really regal sort of bearing that usually when you see reporters represented in movies and TV, they are not Trent Crim. Does that kind of character crop up in UK-based entertainment? This sort of, he's almost like a professorial, almost, in his kind of bearing.
I said he was very, like, lion-like.
Mm. Especially with his hair. That mane of hair he has. Yeah.
Right,
yeah. He seemed very regal for a sports reporter.
Right.
I feel like we're not introducing him properly. We should give him his full title before we talk about him.
Oh, by all means.
Trent Crim, The Independent.
The Independent, right. Yes, yes. Every time he stands up in a press conference, he says the whole bit, even though Ted knows him. He does.
Well established.
Right. Everyone in the room knows him.
One of the things this show does quite a lot is deal with British stereotypes. And there is this sort of snobby elite side of the media that he is, that he's taking the mickey out of, and the show is taking the mickey out of as well. And The Independent is a broadsheet newspaper it's not a tabloid.
British media does have that aspect to it, that tabloid aspect that's pretty famous, that has like the catchy, biting titles and that kind of stuff that you associate with that sort of media that this professorial type staid image does not jive with so well, you know? So it makes sense what you're saying, that he's not of that ilk.
No, we do see one reporter at one point that says he works for The Sun, which is one of the major tabloid newspapers here, and everyone in the press room boos him, and quite rightly so.
That's good context. Newspaper-wise, what we're used to is that only the largest cities have more than one newspaper. Like I live in Houston, fourth largest city in the United States, and we only have one newspaper. And when it comes out, it is getting to be super thin because that's just the way print media goes right now. So the idea of a city having multiple news, being able to support multiple newspapers, that's not a thing we're used to anymore.
To be fair, I wouldn't be surprised if England was the size of Houston.
All right. Fair enough. Let's hit Ted. Yeah, we totally skipped Ted. Ted Lasso, reasonably successful, albeit smaller time, American football coach. Wins a championship on the collegiate level, albeit the lower ranks of the collegiate game. He is plucked from those ranks by Rebecca Welton, the owner of the Richmond AFC, to coach their team. The whole show is about him and how he adapts to this challenge. At first, I was thinking this guy is too positive or something about him just was going to read like, I don't know, like Bob Saget from Full House or something, you know, just like not character that I was going to be able to buy. But that changed. It wasn't like that at all. Like whatever my preconceived notion about this kind of goofy guy was, it didn't bear out. We can go into more detail about it later, but I'll just admit that my initial preconceived notion about this guy with his funny mustache and his thumbs up and all that stuff was way off. Did you guys have any kind of similar or dissimilar takes on Ted?
I felt the same. I saw Ted as that stereotypical, again, another stereotype of the American customer service person. Mm. In Britain, we're always quite wary of happy people. As soon as he turns up, we're just like, he's disingenuous. What's going on here? Yeah, what's his damage? What's wrong with him? But yeah, I won't get into down the line, but my thoughts do change on Ted, and quite quickly, I have to say.
I wasn't sure that I was going to be able to stomach all the optimism. I would say the episode one, I was just like, wow, this guy's really over the top. And is it going to be 10 episodes of this? And I just, you know, I'm not sure that I'm going to be in this for the long haul. But, you know, again, the ether, the buzz about the show was just like, I finished it in a matter of hours was what I was hearing. I'd say once I got to episode two, I was like, let's hit the zoom button on here. You know, let's really go fast with this because episode two, really a lot of things gelled for me with his character. I just wasn't sure how, you know, and Scott, what you said about like, you know, not being able to trust very happy people. I'm from New York, where we are known for our cynicism, right? Yes. So when I go outside of my own comfort zone out of New York City, I'm just like, why are you so happy? What is the matter with you? Are you going to murder me in the back of your truck?
I've never felt more comfortable in America than when I was in New York.
A lot of people say that we get a bad rap. We really do. Like, I would say the New Yorkers are some of the most helpful people, but we do have this like cynicism to us that like, you know, don't dare stop in the middle of the road to look up at something because we will cut you. But meanwhile, if you are truly lost, we will definitely, I've walked people. I work in Lower Manhattan. I've walked people to their destination because they just give me this like, you know, deer in headlights look like, you want me to go where? I'm like, it's a grid. It's numbers. You know, like, it's good. It's easy. We don't necessarily trust a lot of happy optimism. So, but I'm happy that they found the balance for Ted to make him really palatable and have this, like, just the writing just take off for him.
I'm glad they changed him from what originally was Ted Lasso.
Yes.
I assure you, have you both seen the NBC advert?
I have not.
I don't know if it was there the whole time, but in the last episode, in the opening credits, because I usually just skipped them, but for some reason, I like the Mumford & Son. It's Marcus Mumford. I like the song. So I just wanted to listen to it, and I saw the credits. I was like, a promo by NBC Sports? Of course, my curiosity got the better of me. Yeah, Paul, this was a promo from like 2013 where NBC Sports was bringing over the Premier League, Scott?
They called it the EPL, the English Premier League.
Okay.
Yeah, so they were bringing this over to NBC Sports. They had these short promos. They were like 2 minute long commercials, like I guess like shorts with Coach Beard and Ted Lasso. And he was like, one of the skits was that he was like, what's the offside rule? He's like, no, really, explain it to me. I don't know what it is. when he's yelling at one of the refs. So yeah, there was like maybe like three or four of them, I think. And they were able to spin it into a TV show. But yeah, he was super over the top in those little shorts.
Well, I agree with you that had they stayed with just kind of that one-dimensional, always happy guy without fleshing out that there was an approach to what he was doing rather than just sort of being a simple-minded kind of person or something.
Well, also that he had depth, that he had this emotional range of the events that happened to him during the season, that, you know, he is able to come down from that high as well and actually feel like the real emotions that the rest of us also feel.
Well, let's get into talking about that by first rendering our Love It or Leave It reviews, and then we can get into talking about some of these more spoilery sort of comments. Scott, what would you rate this one on the Love It or Leave It scale?
For me, without spoiling anything, this is an absolute love it. And that's a high praise coming from someone who doesn't like football.
I too dislike football and or soccer, depending on which side of the pond that you're on. My closest relation to soccer is when my three-year-old played it when he was three. And I'd swear my blood pressure was never higher because there he was running down the other end of the field. So yeah, soccer and me or football and me are not really good friends. That being said, I said it earlier in this podcast, I devour this in a night and a morning. So this is a definite love it from me.
Me too. I loved this and I have no love for this game. In recommending this show to people, the next thing I say is, yeah, it's about that, but almost none of it takes place on the field.
It's about that, but it's not really about that.
No, it's not. So you're not going to be watching a show with a lot of dramatic, you know, kicking and plays on the field. It's not, there's almost none of that.
Like, so, we didn't really find out what offside was, you know.
You know, as people that are just sort of conversationally aware of the point of this game, whenever offsides is discussed, that is kind of funny because, you know, a lot of kids do grow up playing soccer. That was always a mystifying call that the ref would make, you know, this 16-year-old person that had taken the refereeing course or whatever, deciding to call offsides. None of us were like, well, I don't know what that means exactly, except the other team has the ball now. And so it was always funny whenever
they're discussing it.
Yeah, basically. All right, so that's three love it's. Now, if you haven't seen the show for some reason, then go ahead and stop this podcast. Otherwise, we're going to start talking about some of the more specific plot points and character things that made us very interested in this show that we wanted to discuss with others. So what do you guys want to talk about first?
How Ted reels you in to become his biggest cheerleader.
You know, for me, this is much further into the show, but the point where I knew that I could really dig into him was when they were staying at that hotel. I forget the exact thing, but it was a combination of whether it was dealing with his wife or some other disappointment, but he kind of lost his shit for a second and the positivity dropped.
Was that with Nate? Did he scream at Nate?
Yeah, that was it.
Yeah. And yeah. It was like, okay, there is a lot of real feelings in there. And he is, I kind of understood him a lot better in that moment. What about you guys?
I think it was a bit earlier for me. I did sort of say this when I was talking about Ted earlier. I it was either the end of the second episode or the first. I actually rewatched it this week for this podcast. But he has a call back home, and you can tell that there's a strain on the relationship already at that stage. And it just hints at the onion layers that we're going to slowly peel back throughout the season. And that, for me, just says, okay, there's at least a second dimension to this guy.
He's projecting this positivity for the sake of leadership.
Yeah. And the question is, like, why would you go across the world to get away from a relationship? What's the problem? And then the episode slowly hints that there is a relationship problem. And then obviously you learn more as you go along. But it just means that there's something there to connect to. We've all had troubled relationships at some point in our lives, and we can all sort of resonate with that some way or another.
Right. And the idea that this person who approaches everything with what seems to be this rose-colored glasses outlook, the fact that they actually have this layer to them does make him a more compelling character than someone that didn't, you know. All of a sudden it does make him a real person instead of a caricature.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what got me on board for Ted. I don't think I was probably sold until maybe that hotel episode, or maybe when his wife came to visit a little later on, and you could really tell that there was several layers to him at that point.
What drew you in, Sheila?
Actually, when he had the panic attack at the the bar, right? He had the panic attack, and Rebecca goes to him and helps him out. And then the morning after, they're having this conversation, and he mentions Oklahoma, and that's when him and his wife have to, as part of their counseling, you know, the couple's therapy. We didn't really like the other couple. I thought that whole exchange between him and Rebecca was the dimension that got added, and then they fleshed it out really well with now the problems in the marriage. But I think the confidence between him and Rebecca, that he'd been there for Rebecca at this point a couple of times, like the press was being pretty nasty to her at a couple of moments. And also when he stood up for her at the benefit, when he told Rupert that, you know, he kind of knew that he canceled Robbie Williams, and, you know, Robbie Williams is a big deal. So the fact that, like, you know, he's a nice guy, but he's also not going to be someone who's going to allow people to walk all over him. But just having also the vulnerability in the panic attack and opening up to Rebecca, I think that was the window to the other side of Ted. That's just like, oh, you're as damaged as the rest of us.
There's part of that character that's constantly positive, like, you know, like a Ned Flanders or something like that, that you also I associate with it being completely fake.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that goes with that is not being particularly good at what you say you're good at. Sort of, I don't know, like Steve Carell in The Office, you know, like he's the boss, but no one can figure out why exactly. That's The American Office. Sorry, Scott.
Thank you for correcting it. Thank you.
But that moment when he's playing darts and he wins like, well, it helped me like him more, in that for some reason I needed him to be good. You know, I needed him to not be buffoonish in that. And the fact that he wasn't helped.
Yeah, that it wasn't all smoke and mirrors with him.
By that point, he hadn't necessarily proven that he actually knows how to transfer his coaching knowledge, you know, from one sport to the other. So the fact that he had these interpersonal skills that didn't rely on just blatant positivity, that he could read a situation and assess it and make a decision how to move forward and address it and do it with some skill in an area, all that added up to me rooting for him a lot more after that. I liked that they made his character able instead of just positive. That's not enough for me. All this discussion definitely ties in to the Rebecca character and how complex they made her, as opposed to just a bad person, which, you know, that in the first 15 minutes of the show, you might think, well, okay, so she's the antagonist, and so she's always going to make decisions based on this one thing that they've set her up to do. Oh, she wants the team to fail, so everything she does is for that reason. And that's only true, like, I don't know, half the time at best, as it turns out for the rest of the show. What do you guys think about Rebecca?
It's kind of hard for me to put my finger on the moment in time when I switched over to being a fan of Rebecca. It's not as defined, I would say, in my head as when I was on board with Ted. You could tell pretty early on that she was just a really damaged person and was just trying to deal with all of this craziness going on around her. Owning a football club, you know, your ex-husband's dating 18-year-olds, it's quite crazy. And so you start to just slowly respect her position and empathize with her, really.
I really liked when Keeley came to Rebecca's rescue a couple of times, and that friendship, I feel, is where Rebecca became human in our eyes. And I feel like between Keeley and just Ted's, you know, winning personality, his Mr. Rogers qualities about him winning her over, that was where she started to kind of like melt a little bit of that core that she had, like her little ice wall around.
I liked how she kept accepting the biscuits, even though she said that she didn't want them, but she kept accepting and then eating and then insisting that Higgins try to go find more of them, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That was a little bit of the, if she was trying to be an iceberg, you know, it was definitely, that was part of the dripping that was melting her.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I think the moment that I think was the most interesting for me was, you know, at the karaoke, you know, and she totally unexpectedly belts out Let It Go. By that point in the narrative, she's already caused a lot of damage with certain decisions, you know, spying on people, etc. As a person watching her and seeing that she's got other things about her, she cares about people and isn't really this person that would make such petty, expensive decisions like ruining a football club. But she's done it anyway. You know, that was the most interesting moment for me, because right after that is when she's helping him out in the alley sort out his panic attack.
I got the impression, especially on my rewatch this week, that they might have started off with maybe two or three episodes and then started to shoot them and then wrote the rest. Because I feel like a lot of characters really changed around the second, third episode. Like, Rebecca's character, a lot of the meanness towards Ted just sort of goes around that stage. And everyone just, and, you know, she then starts a friendship with Juno Temple's character, Keeley. And she gets more interesting at that point, as we said.
But I can definitely see what you're saying in that whenever I recommend this to somebody, I do say watch a couple. Give yourself enough time to watch a few of them, because the first one might not do it for you. But by two or three in, you should have decided that you want to keep going. And that might be the case in what you're saying, because you're right. If all you're going with is the first one, then you pretty much have a setup for a run-of-the-mill sitcom. Characters that don't have that depth yet, that you feel like are set up to be pretty much the same changeless person through the run of the show. That you don't have those layers yet. Did you notice anything like that, Sheila?
I didn't know to put my finger on it, but yeah, the second episode, there was definitely, the first and second episode have a different tone than I'd say the rest. But I also found it interesting, I did some research, Zach Braff actually directed the second episode, which is where the biscuits are introduced. And then there's like these layers of complexity. So, and Zach Braff was in Scrubs, and Bill Lawrence is actually one of the creators behind the show. So I just thought that was like a very interesting connection in terms of tone, because Scrubs also has that like oddly upbeat kind of feeling to it as well.
That one leans into the absurd a little bit, whereas this, I think, wanted to stay grounded in stuff that people would say or do. But yeah, I see what you're saying.
Oh, yeah.
But I would also, I mean, having Bill Lawrence on the ticket for this was one of the reasons I actually watched this show, because I'm a huge, huge Scrubs fan. So having him behind it gave me a sense of comfort going into it. Scrubs has these moments where, yeah, it has these zany skits and stuff, but then there's some episodes that really just go for your heartstrings and you're bawling by the end of it. So it can play with your emotions too, and I think this show does that quite well.
Oh, I'll say episode 10, there was definitely a tear in my eye.
Yeah.
That locker room scene at the very end. Yeah. I was definitely like, the allergies are really getting high here today.
Damn hay fever.
It really tugged at your heart. Yeah, exactly. But it did tug at your heartstrings. So, I feel like there was like that authenticity to like the Scrubs line that Bill Lawrence brought.
Well, that'd be interesting to find out more about, because I was not a Scrubs devotee in any way. I saw a couple episodes, but it didn't do it for me.
It kept me company when I was on maternity leave and I had to have basically things that I could watch while I was up all hours of the night.
Sure. You had shelved a couple of comments, Scott, that you wanted to bring up post break. Was there any of those things you wanted to talk about?
Well, Jamie Tart was one of the main ones.
Jamie Tart,
played by Phil Dunster, who's the wunderkin on loan from Manchester City, as we mentioned earlier. He's awful. You know, on the sort of outside level, that veneer, he has a massive wall up, and Ted is constantly trying to break down that wall. And this, maybe you could argue he does by the end, but his character sort of resonated for me a little bit because the daddy issues. And I'm a man with some complex daddy issues, and I got that. So especially on that last episode, that heartbreaking scene where, you know, you see Jamie Tart, he scored the winning goal that, you know, we're in the spoiler section here. The team gets relegated at the end. That's a big thing for a team to have to deal with. But Jamie Tart scored the winning goal against the team he was playing for earlier in the season. But because he doesn't score the goal, he passes to someone else who scores the goal. And then he's then berated by his father for not scoring the goal himself, because he grew as a person and passed the ball.
That's complex.
Through Ted's coaching directly.
Mm-hmm. That's a bit beyond sitcom 30-minute writing, isn't it?
That's
some good stuff.
Yeah, and actually, the comment that I shelled about Jamie, where I was just like, yeah, maybe you're not the biggest wanker in the room was when they were doing the like the purge of the ghost of the treatment room. And he brought in his boots, right? His cleats for, you know, whatever your vernacular is. He was identifying how much rage and hatred he had because of his father and his riding his coattails. But ultimately, he threw them into the bin because he wanted to make his mother proud, his mom proud. And at the very end, then when Ted gives him, well, Coach Beard gives him the note from Ted. And he's, you know, basically like, I'm proud of you for, you know, for making the pass, and gives him the little soldier and what that represented. And, you know, that was a big moment for Jamie to do that, because his teammate had the sure goal, whereas he didn't. So making the pass really was the difference between winning and losing. So I liked that they did that. And like Scott, to your point, these were some big issues that they handled in these very short 30 minutes, you know, to bring that depth and that, the daddy issues, really, it gives this show that certain something that you're just like, okay, this is why this is good. And this is why 5 days after it premiered, it got season two.
Mm-hmm. And three now, I think, as well.
I think you're right. Yeah.
That's what makes Ted believable as not just a character, but as a person. He says it to Trent when Trent is trying to interview him.
Trent Crim, the Independent.
Trent Crim of the Independent, right.
Thank you.
That he just loves coaching, as he says. Even though, you know, Jamie is not on his team anymore, he still sees himself as his coach just by the nature of their relationship. That's just the way it is. And so reinforcing that his coaching worked, that the kid did improved, he grew, and then recognizing that, man, I don't know. I wish that there are these kinds of coaches and mentors out in the world.
And then there's the moment too where the fan goes up to Jamie and wants to take an ussy instead of a selfie, and he shows him the video where Ted is praising him, you know, going back to Manchester City and praising him for the player that he is. And then Jamie's like, he's just trying to get inside my head. But he got through. Like, he did get inside your head because you changed, because he was a real asshole before it, and he softened a little bit.
Similarly with Roy, when he gives him the book and he reads the book to his niece. that scene when he's reading it, and I forget that book, but it's like Missing Piece or one of those, or, you know, something like that. It's got a moral right there for the reader, and he's what does he say? Something like shit.
he's completely inappropriate for lunch. Right. She's like 7 or 8 years old. Right. Yeah.
When he's at in the classroom, and he says something about, let's go have a fuckabout, right? Yeah.
And all the kids are cheering because he cursed
instead
of being excited for what he was doing.
I mean, his accent was a little rough for ears that aren't used to it, but I think we got the point.
I watch everything with closed captions, so.
It was silky smooth to me, but
I'm sure.
Scott's probably just happy to watch something that doesn't have a grating New York accent or something.
I'm just happy to watch something that's not a spy noir or something like that. You know, it's a nice change for me sometimes.
Keep your skills honed, right?
Well, that's it. But I'm glad we got on to Roy Kent, because I think he's, after the three we've really mentioned, he's probably my next favorite.
For sure. Another character that was set up to be one way, felt fine with where he was, but needed to grow. And they did, kicking and screaming, literally, made him grow.
I think with him, and it is also kind of a line through most of the major characters in this show, is that dealing with loss in some way, shape or form. He's a person that has built his entire persona around football and being the best. He's now facing having to hang up his boots. That's a daunting prospect for anyone. So your self-identity is then erased. And he questions that in the end, where he speaks to his niece and she describes him as a really cool uncle and doesn't even mention football. And that helps him eventually decide to hang up his boots. And it's just amazing that this show like deals with all these really complex emotions, but through the lens of football, of all things.
And comedy, you know?
Yeah.
I'm sure it's something that as non-professional athletes, we look at the idea of a professional athlete needing to hang it up. And I'm sure we take it much lighter than it deserves. You know, the idea of being paid to play a game is something that I think a lot of people would just assume, like, boy, anybody would do that if they could, but they totally overlook the kind of lives that they need to lead in order to be a professional athlete and what kind of commitment that takes and the punishments their bodies have to endure and all the long-lasting effects that come from that, whether it's interpersonal sacrifices that they needed to make or whatever that Roy kind of embodies that he brings to the fore with his story. And he's at that point where he is going to have to hang it up and what that means to him. It's not as simple as, well, I just need to move on to the next phase of my life, I guess, you know, or whatever. It's not that easy that some of us might take for granted as something that looks like it should be easy, because after all, they've had the privilege of earning a living by playing a game.
It is interesting, Paul, because, like, I'll tell you that, you know, I live in New York, right? So we have a lot of newspapers and we have a lot of sports teams. I think there's like 6 or 7 professional sports teams. One of the rare times I can remember the sport story being the front page of the newspapers was when Derek Jeter retired from the New York Yankees. Talk about someone who's like punishing their body, but somebody who also, you know, lived up to certain ideals and, you know, wanted to keep a certain image. And, you know, the moment where he like stepped out of the dugout for the final time and he waved his helmet at the fans, that like is something. I'm not a Yankee fan, I'm a Met fan, but it's something that resonates because you do have this persona, this draw, you have this impact on the community. So yeah, there is a lot to be said about someone who defines their life playing a sport, because for many of these people, these professional athletes, this is something they've been identified as from like something like 3 or 4 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So
right. You're
talking about a very long time of your identity being tied up in this. So when it vanishes or when the finish line is in sight, it is very scary.
Well, sort of harkening back to that episode where they burnt their demons, as it were, he speaks about being signed to club. I can't remember the name of the club exactly, at the age of like 9.
Oh, Sunderland, yeah.
Was it Sunderland? Right. A couple of leagues down. And that was his life from that age. I don't even know what I want to do now. I can't imagine that. You know? And so I completely understand the daunting prospect, in a sense, of having to change your entire persona, because you've been that person since 9. You've been that amazing footballer. And now what are you?
An amazing uncle.
If you're listening to this podcast, mm-hmm. you might be wondering, does this show merit this level of discourse in that it's a half an hour show about this goofy guy and being a fish out of water in London and all that? And I would say yes, it does. The actors, the writing and the characters do merit this extra thought because they are bringing more to it than just a simple presentation of straightforward characters.
Right. It's not a straightforward comedy. There's like this drama element. There's these deeper plot lines.
I can't think of anyone that I don't recommend this show to if given the chance. It's just kind of the relative obscurity of Apple TV Plus. You know, it's funny to say that because Apple is such a dominating force in the technical sphere and the retail electronics, you know, with iPhones and et cetera, all their products, all the influence that they have. But their streaming service is not one that everybody has just yet in comparison to, say, Netflix or Prime or even Hulu. Those are the kind of the big ones. And this one is a distant, I think, in terms of level of acceptance. But that doesn't keep me from recommending it. I don't know that I recommend this to somebody that, say, only likes horror movies or something like that. But pretty much everybody else, I do recommend it to. I think you guys are probably in that same boat by the sounds of it.
Yeah, I've definitely struggled to recommend it. And not in the sense of I don't think people would enjoy it. It's just the accessibility. I've had people come back to me and say, I don't want to buy Apple for this. It's not enough to sell them on the one show. And I think that's fair. It's a bit different here in the UK. There's far less subscription services than there are in the States. We don't have Peacock or HBO Max or anything like that. We just have Netflix and Amazon Prime and maybe Disney Plus. That's the sort of main three here. But if you ask anyone to go above those three, it's too much. Even Netflix itself is almost too much for some people here.
Value-wise, it's a harder call to make, but I enjoy what they're making. Yeah, I hadn't taken into account the idea that there are people that are like, I don't support Apple. But there are those people that are like that.
Those Android people. Yeah, I kind of tend to come at this from a, yeah, it is another streaming service, but the things that I've watched so far on Apple TV Plus have been really quality shows. I mean, Dickinson, For All Mankind. I watched Cherry very recently. We did a podcast, Paul, a couple of weeks ago on that.
Yeah.
Greyhound was very good. Palmer, I liked. So there's a number in The Morning Show, right? That was one of the first things that I watched on here. So there are a lot of quality offerings, but like you said, it's just the amount of content may not warrant the price of admission for some people, especially when I think on, like, how many streaming services do I have? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. I have 12 streaming services.
Oh, geez.
Good grief.
Yeah.
What the?
I have Stars. I have Showtime. I have Paramount Plus, Netflix, Hulu, Prime, Apple, BritBox, HBO Max, Disney Plus, Peacock.
BritBox is just what you call TV, Scott.
Exactly. I was going to make that joke. Thank you.
But it satisfies all of my family's watching needs. I don't have cable TV. We have YouTube TV, but that even might be going away soon.
Here's a tough question for all of us. I think because I think all of us said this. I know, Paul, I think you said it as well, but that we all got Apple TV Plus through purchasing iPhones or Apple products. Is that right?
Oh, I'm just a regular subscriber.
So you're a day one subscriber.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I would have picked up Apple TV Plus if I hadn't have got the phone. And as such, I wouldn't have seen the show, which is a shame.
I know. Now the question becomes, do I renew this next month? You know, I like what I've seen, but it's just, you know, is it worth the spot on the 12?
Here's a funny thing. As a subscriber, for the last, I don't know, 3 or 4 months, they've basically been paying my subscription in that they send me a $4.99 credit to my account. And if I don't use it for like buying a movie or something else, then they pay my subscription fee with it. They say it's like loyalty or something like that. I think it is just to keep me there. not that I'm leaving exactly, but yeah, that's something that they did. I didn't ask for it. They just started doing it.
I don't think Apple will do this, but if Apple TV sticks around, I don't think they'll do it. But if Apple TV Plus does go the way of Quibi, I hope they sell the rights to the show on to a network. Of all the ones I've seen of their shows, I think this is the one I'd like to watch more of.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, this would be at the top. This would be at the top of the season two following for me.
Yeah, my daughter is a Snoopy aficionado, and this is where all the Snoopy properties currently live. So she would need that to be sorted out first and foremost if Apple TV Plus went away. I sure hope it doesn't, but I do hope that they find a way to keep pumping out material in a way that makes people want to subscribe rather than it just remain this kind of obscure also ran that it is at this point. Winning these awards does help, and getting these nominations does help get it this notoriety like The Morning Show did when it first came out. I don't know that it won anything, but I know that that the actresses at least were nominated for every, you know, major TV award that there was at the time. Yeah, they're gonna have to keep pumping money into it to really honestly compete with the more established streamers.
Well, I mean, and just like the talent of Jason Sudeikis, like, you know, he's a very well-known name. So that is a lure in and of itself. Like if you have, you know, if you're a hardcore Jason Sudeikis fan, you're gonna seek out his work one way or another.
Like I said, though, I like him. It still took me 3, 4, 5 months of his little face showing up on my Apple TV banner before I was like, okay, I'll see what this is about.
Yeah, there was one thing about Ted that I guess I kind of thought of. If it had been any other actor, I don't know if the optimism would have come across the same way. Like, I feel like if it had maybe been somebody else that I don't even have a contemporary to kind of pull from from my brain. But if it had been somebody else, I don't know if I would have bought the optimism, the never fail attitude the same way that I did from him.
Yeah, I'm trying to think like someone about that same level of notoriety. I'm thinking like John Krasinski.
I was just thinking of Andy Samberg.
Okay.
Okay, yeah.
Quite a positive SNL comedian as well. They've both got that.
Right.
Jason managed to lose some of that goofy type aura that he had from SNL by doing movies where he played straighter characters that were still in comedies, but less ha-ha funny.
Less slapsticky, right?
Right, right, right. Where Andy, with all of his work on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, still has, I think he has a lot of aura to lose if he wants to do this kind of role.
Yeah, he's kind of pigeonholed, I think, into that comedy genre.
Yeah, so if you got this far in the podcast, I think we're all just agreeing that this is well worth your time. And by the time you're done with it, you will be like us and be recommending it to other people. I have yet to run into somebody that has been like, yeah, I watched the whole thing and I don't like it. That hasn't happened yet. Thank you guys for joining me on this Love It or Leave It podcast for Ted Lasso. This is Paul.
This is Sheila.
And this is Scott.
Thanks for joining us all today.
Thank you for listening. This has been an original Pod Clubhouse production. Pod Clubhouse is a podcast network dedicated to encouraging collaboration among podcasters and friends to bring a fresh voice and diverse perspective on a wide array of content. Please visit and leave a comment for us at podclubhouse.com. Rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast feeds on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You can find us at Pod Clubhouse. Our DMs are always open, and we'd love to hear from you.